everyone, and welcome back to Australian Politics Live, the podcast. I am, I believe, Catherine Murphy, as I generally am, and this lady sitting in front of me is...
Gabriel Chan, political correspondent for Guardian Australia.
Yes, she is, and aren't we the better for it. Now, Gabby and I were going to do our usual, oh my God, politics OMG conversation that we have because we haven't actually done one for a few weeks. We've had a run of really quite interesting interviews over the last little bit. But then lo and behold, we were just sitting down in the studio and who should be walking by but the leader of the Greens, Richard Di Natale.
He was indeed. And he was fresh from the National Press Club.
He was.
His big speech. So we had a chat with him and it was really interesting because it talked about the Greens and where they position themselves in between the protest party where they grew from and the kind of getting something done party that they morphed into sort of and the crossover between those two bookends. So listen up. It's an interesting conversation.
Richard Di Natale, welcome to Australian Politics Live, the podcast.
G'day.
Now, I want to start off by talking to you a little about where the Greens position themselves post-election. Everybody who follows politics knows that the Greens started as out of the protest movement, became a protest party in the parliament. In recent times, there's been a transition in the Greens where you've looked basically to try and generate outcomes through voting for government legislation, voting against government legislation, but all of that's a fine balance. So where do you sit on the spectrum of we need to be a sort of true to our protest heritage, but we also need to try and generate some outcomes?
Well, I think you can do both. I think you can be true to your heritage but also try and negotiate your way through the parliament to get outcomes for people. I mean, the reason I'm here is because I was a 12-year-old kid, you know, in a big Italian family. My young uncle decided to leave Brunswick and go and get himself locked up on the Franklin River campaign, you know, and as a 12-year-old kid, he was my hero. So I have profound respect, admiration for all of those people who have put themselves on the line to try and protect our environment, advance the rights of working people, women, civil rights movement. I mean, that's our history and something we're very, very proud of. Bob Brown has been a hero to me and a mentor, Christine as well. But I think you can do both. And so we'll continue to do what we've done in the parliament, which is sometimes disrupt the parliament, like Bob Brown did when he stood up and called out George Bush, like we did when we walked out on Pauline Hanson. That's, I know people around the building don't like it, but I think there's real power in resisting, in expressing solidarity with you know, the people who don't have a voice. But equally, we've got a responsibility as members of parliament to try and put the partisan politics to one side and get stuff done. And we've done that. We've done that with a range of things. So, you know, most recently we helped negotiate a compromise on the backpacker tax and incidentally get $100 million for Landcare, which was a win for farmers and the environment. We've done it with the Medical Research Future Fund. We did it by supporting a government legislation around a national register of water licences and foreign-owned farmland. I mean, there are a number of things we've done through this parliament where we've got outcomes. We've also stopped a lot of bad laws as well, and that's also a job for us. There's always a tension. I know there are some people who say, be like Tony Abbott. You can't go near the coalition. They're toxic. Every time you do something with them, it hurts you. You know, you look like you're buddying up to them. But in the end, I mean, we've got a responsibility as legislators, and Tony Abbott's not going to be a role model for me in opposition or for the party. So together we've got some legislation through that we think's in the national interest. We've got more transparency on multinational tax dodgers, for example. We've stood in opposition to policies that we think are bad for the country, and we continue to be a voice for people who don't have a voice, represent those great protest movements, to be their political arm, to work hand in glove with all of the people who are fighting outside the parliament to achieve change.
What about, though, I think one of your colleagues, I can't actually remember which one, but one of your colleagues suggested my memory is at the beginning of the year that the Greens kind of needed to channel Bernie Sanders, needed to sort of bring that firebrand, you know, sort of thump the lectern type consciousness raising to the process. Do you agree with that or?
Oh, well, some people we do say we do a bit too much table thumping and consciousness raising and we need to be, you know, more responsible and sensible. Like in the end, I'm very proud of the platform that we stand on. I'm proud of the way that all of us conduct our business with, I think, a great degree of integrity. We stand up for people when it counts. And I think in many ways, you know, I think Bernie Sanders was sort of arguing for universal healthcare and education. Well,
it's all we've pretty got standard we in wanna, the Australian wanna, context. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. We actually want to build on that. We want Medicare-funded dental care. Let's expand our public health system.
Okay, well, expanding. Let's just stick with expanding for a bit because you've obviously mentioned examples where you've voted in favour of government legislation, examples where you voted against it. What about this week you've appeared at the National Press Club, you've tried to expand the conversation in a number of different interesting and important ways. How do you then, when the major parties aren't really interested in an agenda, say, like trying to minimise working hours, or if they're not really interested in what you want to say on universal basic income, for example, how do you grab major party politics by the lapels and make them take your agenda seriously? And by that I mean, do you, for example, when you're going to vote for a government proposal, do you up your asking price? Mm. Do you basically say to the government, well, yes, look, I'm more than happy, Joe Bloggs, to support this initiative and we'll want a bit of things in return because that's how politics works. But actually we want this really quite big thing in return.
Look, the truth is there's not much that we agree with when it comes to this government. And if you're looking at opportunities to have leverage, there are very few of them. We're poles apart from where, you know, the coalition are on climate change, on the treatment of refugees, on giving big tax cuts to corporations. There's not much there. And if you look at where the other parties vote, I mean, we vote with the coalition much less than the Labor Party, certainly One Nation. There aren't that many issues on which you can actually exert that leverage. So that's the truth of it. You know,
you're saying it's just not the real world because the opportunities don't come frequently enough.
That's right. They don't come along frequently. And no one would have predicted that, for example, the most recent one is the backpack attacks. Now, there was an opportunity to get $100 million for Landcare, which we delivered on. But it's hard to foresee where the next opportunity might come along because our positions are so far apart. And it's more likely that the Labor Party or One Nation will be able to negotiate on a deal with the government than we are. In fact, they do it quite regularly. But in terms of how do you actually get heard in this environment and actually advance things, I mean, the obvious thing is the more that we can connect with people about the things that I know people agree with. And again, I think the biggest obstacle to our vote is that not many people actually know you know, our position on some key things. Most people like the idea of universal public health care that includes dental care. They like the idea of having a public education system that that means they don't have to spend exorbitant fees to send their kids to private schools because they've got a world-class public education system. They want action on climate change. I mean, most people who have a progressive outlook understand that what we're doing to refugees is just can't be justified on moral grounds. I think the challenge for us is trying to connect with people, social media and online channels, and channels like this. I'd like to give a free plug to The Guardian. It's wonderful having some more media diversity, and I think The Guardian's been a really important player in the media landscape. All of those things help us to do that. Sometimes you've got to be a little, I think, edgy, and I think arguing for a reduced working week is that. And again, to be frank with you, when we thought about it yesterday and in preparing for it, we knew we were doing it, I was a bit nervous because I knew it was a risk. But I've been overwhelmed with how it's been received. People are really interested by some of these innovative and exciting ideas. How you turn that into concrete action is a much bigger question.
Well, that's the question.
Well, it is the question, but I think we've all got a role to play in that. Our politics is making that very difficult. It's become very partisan. It's becoming more adversarial. Our media, as I said today in the press club speech, the, The media model's broken down. It's hard for people to spend time doing good, thorough investigative journalism. It's more opinion and commentary. There are so many things feeding into this. I'm an optimist. I look at our vote amongst young people, it's high. I look at the issues that really are going to define the next generation and our issues, housing affordability, dangerous global warming, income inequality, things that we've got a really good story to tell on. So I'm optimistic. I think you have to be. But ultimately, that's what living in a democracy is all about. It becomes a decision for the community.
So the danger for you, and I think from the time you came to the leadership, you've seen as Mr. Reasonable. Is Mr. Reasonable boring in a political climate where everyone's shouting louder and louder? Mm. It's really hard to stay edgy, right, in this kind of environment.
Oh, look, it's always going to grab headlines if you stand up and say you don't want Muslims in Australia, or vaccines cause autism, or isn't Putin a great president, you know? Like, yeah, maybe I could take my shirt off and ride a horse like Putin does, you know? Maybe I could do that. I'm sure to get a few headlines. But, like, that's not what I signed up to do.
But it's difficult, isn't it, in this environment?
It is a difficult environment. Yeah. It's a bit of a circus at the moment.
Yeah.
And the loudest noises, the most objectionable comments are what tend to get pickup. That's why we have to be smarter about the way we do what we do. We can connect with people much more directly now in an unmediated way through social media. And if you look at the way people are consuming information, it's not through traditional channels. So that, again, is a note of optimism for me. We can reach people very directly, and we do that all the time. And I think the other thing is, if our vote's been very strong and solid for a number of years, and I think it'll continue to build. You know, I know when Bob decided he was going to resign, people said, oh, well, that's the end of the Greens, they're gone. And they said the same thing when Christine left, and our vote continues. Now the criticism is, oh, well, the Green vote's stagnating. When our vote does go up, there's always an excuse given. I look at the long-term trends. Major party vote's shrinking. Minor party vote's growing. People are looking for a genuine alternative. And I think if people see that you are a genuine alternative, you don't just offer grievance, but you offer real solutions to problems. You offer a bit of creativity and imagination. You start talking about the things that really matter to people, like do they want to spend 45 hours, 50 hours a week at work, or would they rather spend more time with their family, with their kids, being creative, engaging in leisure, volunteering? I think that's the sort of conversation that we're trying to kickstart. And I'll just finish by saying some of this stuff, I mean, we started talking about climate change, you know, a few decades ago. People said, oh, well, it's out there on the fringes. It's not going to go anywhere as an issue. And, of course, we know that at least the world's focusing their attention on it. Negative gearing and capital gains tax reform, we were banging on about that for years and kept being told, no, look, too many entrenched interests, you won't get anywhere on it. We've moved in that. We've helped to shift the debate. So I think we have moved the dial. I mean, it's not always through supporting government legislation. We had the Labor Party talking about a buffer tax.
Mm, we do.
I mean, it was what I announced at the last press club speech I gave. So we are shifting it. And I'm really proud of the role we play in doing that.
But is the trouble you're not getting the credit for it because the your vote's been stuck on 9% for a while?
Well, our vote went up at the last federal election, and it was the second highest vote we've achieved. Look, getting credit's always tough. Yep, the moment policy on the Banking Royal Commission, Labor voted against it when we put it up, and we kept pursuing it. Peter Whish-Wilson's been a very strong advocate for a Royal Commission. He's sat on inquiries and seen some of the role of the banking and finance sector there. The moment Labor changed their position, I'm being asked, are you going to support Labor's Banking Royal Commission? Or indeed, penalty rates was the other one that was interesting. We proposed in the last election campaign that we would legislate for penalty rates. I walked into this place after Labor announced that they were going to do it, and I was being asked whether I'd support Labor's penalty rate decision. So, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Ultimately, though, you've got to keep focusing on what are you trying to do, and if the issues are being picked up, even if you don't get credit for them, at least the issues are being picked up, and that's what we're here to do.
Sticking with tough, one phenomenon that neither Bob nor Christine have had to manage as much as you have during your period of leadership is the overt signs of factionalism within the Greens. Obviously, the Greens have factions like any other political party and have disagreements like any other political party. But where you guys differ from the major parties is your iron internal discipline. It's not common to see the Greens slugging it out in public with groups like Left Renewal and others basically sort of, you know, should we be communists? Should we be protesters? Should we be centrists? All of this is now occurring in the public space, which the journalist in me thinks is very healthy. But if I was the leader of the Greens Party, I would find somewhat annoying. Is it annoying?
No, it's not annoying. So just a couple of things. We don't have formal factions. And I think the issue here for me was in part, do we want to go down the route of the Labor Party and actually establish formal factions? And I personally think it's a very unhealthy.
Oh, so you had that conversation. Did you have that conversation about whether you should?
No, but I think the very emergence of Left Renewal, and I think that at the time there was issues around binding people to particular votes, taking membership lists and so on, that formal organising principle of having an organised, defined faction, I think is inconsistent with the culture and values of the party. Formal factions don't have a role. Does that debate have a role? Of course it does. Of course it does. And I speak to a lot of young people who are fed up with the nature of turbocharged crony capitalism, this sort of, you know, neoliberal disease that's spread like a virus around the world and thankfully looks like it's coming to an end. Young people who are worryingly saying to me, we actually think democracy's failing and we want something else. Now, that worries me. But where's it coming from? It's coming from a position where a lot of people are feeling like politics as usual has let them down and we've got to do things differently, and we couldn't agree more on that. So I think it's a healthy conversation to have, providing that as a party we maintain a platform that ensures it's done through our grassroots participatory processes. And people, not just in the Greens, but right around the country are having that conversation. What does a world where we deal with income inequality, dangerous global warming, where we're not flogging off every private asset that isn't nailed down, or public asset that isn't nailed down, that's a good conversation to have.
Mm-hmm. But do you think it's all about ideas, or do you think that there's personalities involved?
I think it's largely about ideas. I mean, it's always hard for me to know. I suspect personality always comes into it, but I think it's largely about ideas, and I think it's a good thing to have a debate about ideas.
And so you manage it by allowing the debate to run rather than saying, shut up, everyone.
I think a debate's okay, providing that you don't go down the route of establishing, as I said, and our co-conveners in the party have made this really clear, is that there isn't a role for formal factions in the party. Different people within the party will have different views, and often what you find is that, you know, it's not homogenous blocks of people. People are really, in our party, very committed to the ideas, and they'll coalesce around the ideas rather than around the people.
Mm-hmm. And let's just finish up, Gabby's laughing at me just thinking about what I might be about to lob. Work-life balance was a big issue that you raised in your press club speech, but I'm quite fascinated with the idea that there is no work-life balance in politics, none, zip, zero, and in the little moons that orbit around politics, and what the consequences of that are for the quality of representation, for decision-making, for the calibre of parliamentarians that we have currently representing our interests. What do you think? Is politics hostile territory for humans?
I think it is, but I'd probably have to preface it by saying, when you put your hand up for this gig, you know what you're getting into, and no one forces you to do it. And also, it's a really, we're in a position of privilege. We earn bloody good money. We have, despite the fact that politicians, I think, are despised in some sections of the community, it's still largely a respected profession. People, I think, mostly understand you're doing it for the right reasons. You want to make a positive contribution. You know, and it's a great honour to stand up and represent people and to speak on their behalf. So I don't for a second, you know, look at my life and say, gosh, it's tough. In fact, I just think about my dad, who was an electrician, and think about the long hours he worked. And I've got images of him coming home at 7 at night, collapsing on the couch, just physical exhaustion. If I ever worry about my lot, I think look at my dad and, you know, my family and think I've got it really good. But
I'm sensing a
but. Yeah, there is a but. I mean, yes, it is. It is a life that takes a toll on your family. I mean, we saw Kate Ellis decide that she wanted to spend more time with her children. The toughest thing by a million miles for me in this job is being away from my two kids and my wife. And obviously the long hours that you have to put into it that mean you don't see your family. It also, I think, doesn't make you – I think you have much better perspective when you're a bit more connected to your family and your community. I know that after a bit of a break, we don't get many of them, but we get them occasionally, I come back, I'm fresher, I've got a healthier perspective on life. All the little stuff here that doesn't matter doesn't get to me in a way that it might once you've spent back-to-back sitting weeks doing 280-hour weeks. And I think in terms of the public good, and this is probably the most important thing, is if we want people to truly represent the interests of the community, then we have to try and get people into this job that are people who come from the community, from a wide variety of backgrounds, who don't look at it and say, there is no way I'm going to do that job because the hours suck, the media environment's so bloody hostile, you're getting a brutal character assessment, you know, minute to minute on social media, all of those sorts of things. And I think it does mean we're not getting the sort of representation we need. And sometimes that's reflected, well, often it's reflected in the decisions that are being made in the parliament.
Yeah, do you think that we're not making as good decisions as we used to in politics?
Oh, yeah, I think that's absolutely. Of course I do. I think that we have a democratic deficit right now. Combination of things. I think you've got, you know, big corporate political donations, but we've got a political class of people here that are completely disconnected from the real world. Because it's a job that many people from the real world
wouldn't do.
I'm not going to put my hand up for that. And why do you think we're having a debate about 18C and the Racial Discrimination Act? When if there was ever a debate that was totally disconnected from what people in the community actually think's important, that's one of them. You know, do you reckon there are people out there saying, look, I just don't feel like I can be racist enough. Please change the law.
Well, maybe somewhere, I don't know.
But it's not. It's just not a debate that's had within, I think, you know, the broader community. And like I could go on. There's a litany of the debate we're having on climate. Like, well, there isn't a debate, but the debate around energy and the contribution, you know, of renewables in that's so disconnected from reality. It's disconnected from the business community. We've got a bunch of ideologues, you know, professional politicians who have, half of them have come out of the political office as staffers. They've done their dues to the Liberal Party. You've got a bunch of IPA lackeys. And ultimately, it's the sort of politics you end up with. You know, very adversarial media environment. I think in large, you know, it's really sad to see what's happened to good investigative journalism because the business model is just completely broken down. So we don't get the in-depth journalism that we once got. So all of those things come together and our politics is poorer because of it and the decisions that people have to live with is a consequence of that.
What do you think we can do about it?
Well, you need to keep chipping away at what you do because I think it's really important. We keep chipping away at what we do. We'll continue to advocate for all the things that we do. I mean, I could give you a long list. Let's get donations reform. Let's actually have a conversation about how we can make Parliament work better and how we can attract the right people into this place. Let's recognise that most politicians are in this for the right reasons and concentrate on policy and focus on those issues rather than on the personal, the gossip, the backroom speculation. I think that's quite corrosive. Let's try and do all of those things and maybe we'll go some way to improving things. Ultimately, I'm an optimist. I think we've got a lot of good, vibrant, engaged young people who see what's going on. They want to change it. And I hope we can go some way to helping him do that.
It's a nice note to end on. Richard Di Natale, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Catherine. Thanks, Gabby.
Thanks. Well, after all that, we've sort of covered factionalism, protest versus outcomes.
Social media. Yelling loudly.
Yes, how one gets one's yelling attended to in the crowded marketplace and my personal fixation, which is whether or not politics has become hostile territory for humans. Lots of interesting observations from our guest then. Thank you very much for joining us, you lovely pod people. We love you.
Thank you, listeners.
We do love you. We love your feedback, even when you tell us we're idiots. Gary's just lost it. Do keep that up. You can find other podcasts that are produced by the marvellous Miles Martignoni, the other Guardian Australia podcast. Just search for them in the same way that you search for us. Don't forget to leave the rating, review, all of that sort of business on iTunes. It really does help.
Five star.
Well, I don't know, 3.5 maybe. I don't know.
Depends on the web.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, anyway, whatever. Choose your own star, leave it there. That'd be great. If you could tell your friends about us too, that's also marvellous, because the more audience we get, the more likely we are to be able to keep this going. Thank you again for your time. We appreciate it. We hope the conversation was of interest to you. Gabby and I will be back again next week with, I don't know,
another interesting guest.
Good stuff. We'll be back with good stuff. Ozpol.
Riffing.
Yes. Riffing.
In a sitting week.
Yes. Our favourite. Yeah. It'll be a sitting week, folks. Make sure you're well rested, well hydrated, got your dried rations, whatever you need, because the sitting week looms. Anyway, take care until we talk to you then. See ya.